That's right. A half hour from now, we will be into that game that Bob Kessler was talking about. In literally almost exactly 15 minutes from this very moment, I will hand it off to Judd Surratt for the Chicago Blackhawks pregame show, and then puck drop right there at 2 o'clock. Isn't that exciting? And doggone it, isn't it about time? My guest, John Cacioppo, he's the guy who runs the Center for Cognitive and Social Neuroscience at the University of Chicago. Eating too much sugar, fat, smoking, we know the stuff that's essentially bad for us. But here's one you probably would not have suspected would be bad for your health. People walking by the window heard me say that, and they've stopped. They want to hear what this is. It's living alone, and further, not having close friends or having all that much of a social life. We are biological organisms, and we are therefore designed to regularly interact with other members of our species. John Cacioppo, please tell me I got that right.
Yes.
Oh, I shouldn't have asked. John Cacioppo. He directs the Center for Cognitive and Social Neuroscience at the University of Chicago, and you've done what is considered groundbreaking research in this area.
Thank you.
Now, has this been your specialty from the start, or did you, I mean, you have a broader area of expertise, but what caused you to focus on this one area about the effect on humans of a solitary life?
I didn't start studying this until about 15, 20 years ago, and the reason I started studying the effects of isolation was because we started to ask about the brain, not only in terms of the internal mechanisms, but how it interacts with other brains.
And so as a social entity.
As a social entity. Yeah. And you know, from a neuroscience perspective, one starts to get uncomfortable when you go outside the membrane of a cell. So when you start talking about how brains interact, you're outside a body. And so we wanted to be as rigorous as possible. And so the easiest way to do that is to take away all other conspecifics, other people with whom you can interact, or other animals, all of their other mates, and see what it does to the brain and biology. And what we found was it affects the brain and biology all the way down to genetic expression in very profound ways.
So down to the cellular level, which is your area of expertise, you're seeing impact from experiences that the body that's carrying this brain around has. So neuroscience, tell us in a nutshell what that is. It almost sounds like it's a medical side to it.
Neuroscience is simply an interdisciplinary study of the structure and function of the brain. And because our brain has been designed to interact with others, language, for instance, it hasn't evolved just so we can entertain ourselves in our heads. It's there so we can communicate and connect with others in our
So that's our predisposition. We come prepackaged to have interactions with other of our species.
That's right. 50 years ago in groundbreaking research by Harry Harlow, he isolated monkeys when they were very young, and he found those monkeys didn't develop properly and, in fact, were damaged for the rest of their lives. In a recent science article, an individual took an early mouse, isolated it, and the prefrontal cortex, the front of the brain, didn't develop normally and didn't develop after that two-week period of isolation, was unable to develop.
No wonder isolation is thought of as a punitive in the incarceration system in this country, because it makes us so uncomfortable.
It isn't simply in our country at this time. It's been a punishment across cultures, across history.
Isolation. Right. Yeah, in war, we know. A few weeks ago, watched Bridge Over the River Kwai, and there's the cooler or whatever that was, the hot box where they put people, and the heat was a pain, but the isolation was really what was difficult for them. So is this always the case that somebody might say, you know, I'm just a non-social person. I prefer to be on my own.
There is tremendous differences between feeling isolated and being isolated. Now, when we're studying non-human animals, you can take an animal and isolate them. Just like if I could take an individual and put them in that box you alluded to, over time, they would start to feel very isolated. But for the most part, people are allowed to find company or not as they so wish. And that means that it's not whether you're alone, whether you live alone,
it's
feeling like you're isolated. You can be in a crowd. If you're an Ohio State fan in the middle of the Michigan crowd, you can feel terribly isolated while in a very crowded circumstance.
What is that telling us, though, that it has that effect on the brain? Is it part of our wiring to prompt us to get back into more social environments?
Think about other species. If you've ever watched National Geographic, it's dangerous for an animal to be on the social perimeter. Those are the ones that get predated. Think about Caesar. He didn't read Brutus right. He died at the hands of a friend or what he thought was a friend. Mm-hmm. It's dangerous to be on the social perimeter. Our brain, over all those species developments, has been sculpted to monitor whether we're alone, whether we are isolated, whether we're with others or not, whether there's others with whom we can work and trust.
Why does this have currency right now when you consider these people who are shooting their fellow man in Aurora and in Newtown? Oftentimes, that is one of the key behavior traits, is that they were always by themselves. They were loners, and people always wonder, is that a symptom or an indicator for that kind of behavior?
Again, I don't want to point to the fact that they were alone, because many, many people tend to like time to themselves and not be of that kind. What's more important about those cases is that they all felt excluded. They felt ridiculed. And that's the key, feel isolated, not whether they are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So is there a broad understanding about this? Are you the only researcher doing this? Is this being talked about in the criminal justice system, for example, mental health quarters?
It is now being talked about. There are international efforts. We were working with the Princess of the Royal Princess of Denmark. Denmark has made this a high priority. We were in the
UK. Now, was that the country where that guy went crazy and shot?
No, that's Norway.
Okay.
That's Norway. The UK has decided to do something about this. The health minister there has initiated some efforts. We've done research in the Netherlands, in Argentina, in China, and in the U.S. Yeah. So it's worldwide now.
So it's well beyond theory.
That's right.
There's clear, as you were saying, you can examine the brain and see actual physical change because of this.
In the brain, in gene expression. So which genes are turned on and off is affected by whether you feel isolated or not.
Can you bring this down from the scientific realm, though, to the practical, where a parent might say, okay, that's interesting to me. How should I change or consider changing my parenting, for example, in being sure that my child has as much interaction as healthily optimal?
Well, that's a difficult question, because each child's a little different. One of the features of a person who's highly connected, though, is that they understand what it means to be connected. So I can have a lot of connections, but none of them are very meaningful to me.
Right.
Where the connections really start to take root is when the two or group can do something that the individual's effort added together doesn't equal. If you and I are trying to move furniture in our home, that can be difficult. If we help each other, it's more than twice as easy. And so finding individuals with whom you can actually have these synergies, collaborations, marriages that aren't just we each divvy up the effort like an economic exchange, but rather you exceed what the sum of those parts are. Those are the kinds of reactions.
My sense is that this has a lot to do with the glue of marriage, that you have a ready-made mate who is always going to be there, that you feel that tug that draws you home again, because there is a – I don't know. Is there a hierarchy of the kind of people that we like around us? You know, the spouse would be on the top. The kids would be right there, too.
Well, the spouse is often the most important individual or relationship to a man, not necessarily to a woman. I'm talking about an average. There's lots of variability. So one doesn't have to be married to feel connected, whether man or woman. If you, in our own research, we look at nationally representative samples, a predictor of whether you feel isolated or not is whether you're married. And the good news is that if you're married, you tend to feel less isolated. However, there are people who are feeling isolated in marriages. And if anything, that's even more harmful, because in some ways, not only are they feeling isolated, but they've used up one chance to not feel isolated.
You ever feel like you're taking the magic out of life, though? There's always going to be a scientific explanation for everything.
Quite the opposite. By understanding the science, we're better able to combine the elements so you have the magic.
So you can create the magic, because exactly. We understand what brings it on.
Exactly.
Has this been published broadly, or is it still at the white paper stage?
No, we've been publishing in this field for, as I said, two decades.
But I'm saying in a general interest book.
I published a book called Loneliness about 4 years ago. That was for the general public.
Yeah. How'd it sell?
Did well.
What was the feedback? Did people find it revelatory?
They were surprised. People have been very surprised, simply because there is so much of what we've been talking about of which people are unaware. But they're unaware of it because of how the brain has evolved. All of this happened before consciousness even evolved, and far before humans. We find this isolation leading to early death in fruit flies, in nematodes, in insects, in cockroaches. So it certainly is happening in us. If you fall asleep and you feel isolated, you sleep more poorly tonight than if you don't.
Goodness. Gosh, it makes me think about so many different things. So, John, should I worry about my mom living alone there, even though she claims she doesn't have a lot of interaction? but is trying to write a book, and but is basically alone all day.
You know, the research shows that people who live alone or people who are isolated are at slightly higher risk. However, that's covering up a more important fact, and that is that living alone may lead you to then feel isolated. The biggest predictor is whether I can't get out of the house and go see others. That's the bigger predictor. Some people are now affluent. They choose to live alone. They have their community of friends nearby, and that actually is better for them than moving them to some group housing condition where they feel isolated.
Yeah, and the key point, as you said earlier, was what they feel. If they don't feel alone or isolated, they have satisfactory interactions, perhaps in their mind, that can be enough. Let's take some calls and see what WGN listeners think about this. Dan out of Calistream, you're first up. Good afternoon, and welcome to WGN today.
Hi, Bill. What a fascinating topic, and welcome. Same back to you.
Okay.
So all I was basically thinking about is I was driving along thinking about my 11-year-old and how we observe the way that he interacts with online gaming and things like that. Is that socializing in that sense that you're talking about, or is that a pseudo-socializing?
It's a great question.
I can tell you what I hope the answer is, my gosh. You were shaking your head, so you do have a response to this.
Yes, that's a great question. Think about social networking and online gaming as a tool rather than as a social destination. It's like a car. If you take a car and drive it to find friends and interact with friends, it makes you less isolated. If you use it as a substitute for interacting with other individuals, you drive around and look at other people, you drive around and watch people interact, then it's more isolating. What we have found is that if you tend to feel isolated, you're more likely to use social network and online gaming as a substitute, and that exacerbates, that worsens the feeling of isolation. But many people use it as a method of making new friends and fostering face-to-face interactions, and in that case, it lessens feelings of isolation.
So if it's a proxy for interaction, it's not a good thing unless you're able to have some... But what is that interaction, though? It's just words on a screen, it's playing videos, but...
That's right.
That's interaction?
That's interaction. Well, think about when you
talk. Can I follow up with one thing?
Yeah, yeah.
One thing I'd like to follow up with is do we innately desire to be alone, or do we innately desire to be in community?
Great question. The answer is both. So one of the things we find about people who are very socially connected, who are masters, they tend to be viewed by others as adorable people, is that they know social interactions take energy. And they also know the importance of finding time where they can go off by themselves. That's why being alone is not at all the same as feeling isolated. So those individuals who take the time for themselves but then go back and are rich and generous and compassionate in their interactions with others tend to be the ones that feel the least isolated and the most connected.
Dan, good conversation.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, I'm glad you're able to participate. Hello, Tess. It's WGN. You call. Let's see if we can give you some help. Go ahead.
Thank you so much for taking my phone call. I have a question in regards to kids in the autism spectrum, and some of these kids tend to be antisocial. Has there been any research done in the effects of their brain and their preference to be alone sometimes?
Yes, it's a good question. Autism, as you well know, and autistic spectrum disorders are a heterogeneous group. There's a wide variety of kinds of manifestations of autistic spectrum disorder. But one of the things we do understand now is that individuals may shun what we view as normal social interactions, but that doesn't mean that they don't feel isolated, don't suffer the pain of loneliness, and really have disinterest in interacting with others. Most of what we consider normal interactions or rewarding interactions may not be considered normal or rewarding to them, and that's what we have to come to appreciate. Not that they don't want interactions, but that what we view as normal interactions aren't very rewarding as a rule to autistic individuals.
Tess, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, I'm glad you called.